age of 98.
Thank you very much,
this
Simon.
This is FSN.
I jumped the gun a bit there. Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. It's, well, it's fair to middling here in Salford. Tweeted the programme as usual. Hayden Hewitt joins me of Live League fame and Trigger Warning, of course. And Dr. Vernon Coleman returns to this programme in the second hour. Should be a busy old show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, I mentioned on Twitter, Hayden Hewitt has lately been going to bat for women against what is an increasingly aggressive pro-trans rights movement. What's going on? We'll speak with Hayden Hewitt about that and more. LiveLeak.com, of course, the co-founder of that website, is in the top 2,000-3,000 websites in the world in terms of usership, in terms of numbers. And of course, he's the man behind TriggerWarning.tv as well. Don't miss him. And Dr. Vernon Coleman returns to this programme in hour two. He was with me at the beginning of the month. You know who he is. The author of over 100 books, which have sold a couple of million copies in the UK alone. And a former medical doctor. Very, very interesting man, particularly at this time. So Vernon Coleman in the second hour. And it should be busy. And if you've got something you'd like me to put to Vernon Coleman, it's very simple, just send me a tweet and I will put it to him. It's a mad world. And today we learned of more redundancies, not just in the UK, but around the world. Thousands upon thousands of people. EasyJet, of course, most of us have used EasyJet in the UK, stacking up to 5,000 staff. A localised lockdown in Leicester, with the Health Secretary Matt Hancock saying that the police will enforce it and physically close any businesses that dares open, or that businesses that dare to open. Well, we're struggling, so we have to open. No, the police will enforce it. Rather like putting your foot on a man's head while he's drowning instead of proffering your hand. Yeah, all of this is going on. And this afternoon, all afternoon, trending on Twitter was racism and Jason Lee, a former footballer from the 1990s. Jason Lee trending. A footballer who's been retired for many years. With virtue signalers demanding that David Baddiel and Frank Skinner, comedians, allegedly, apologise for taking the piss out of his haircut back in the 1990s. Now, he had the worst fucking haircut ever seen on a football pitch, ever. If ever a haircut warranted the unmerciful piss being taken out of it, it was Jason Lee's haircut. It was dreadful. Google it, or use Bing or DuckDuckGo. Use whatever you want. It added about 5 pounds to his overall weight. Might explain why he couldn't hit a pig's arse with a banjo, let alone score goals. But apparently it's now an example of racism, you see, to take the piss out of somebody's haircut 30 years ago. Historic racism, while the economy is in the toilet and people are being told, yes, you do live in a police state. Yes, we will close your business physically if you dare open it to feed your family. And historic racism is trending on Twitter. It's mad. And speaking of racism, BBC Country File, which is a show about the countryside and farming and horticulture and sheep shearing, and the like, Country File, it airs every Sunday on the BBC. And last Sunday, 2 days ago, it broadcast an episode which claimed that the countryside isn't a welcoming place for black people.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Yes, people from black, Asian and minority ethnic groups don't feel welcome in the countryside because the countryside isn't inclusive enough. So, Country File sent a black reporter to the country to find out if it really is the hills have eyes, or ding 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 ding, is it deliverance for black people in the UK's countryside? Well, this is a black reporter. Let's hear what he has to say.
When I talk to people from the black and minority ethnic community, it's clear that they don't view the UK countryside as somewhere that's for them.
Yes.
It's clear that they don't view the UK countryside as somewhere that's for them.
Yeah, it's not for them.
It's not theirs.
It's not theirs.
They don't belong there.
They fucking don't belong. Blacks have no business outside the cities.
And I want to find out why.
Well, it's dark in the countryside with all those trees around over the roads. It's darker. Maybe it doesn't suit blacks, maybe.
As it happens, I'm not the only one. Last September, an independent review of England's national parks...
Did you hear the emotional music?
...was published by the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. They found that the countryside is seen by both black, Asian and minority ethnic groups and white people alike as being very much a white environment.
Jesus.
The review also concluded that if that is true today, then the divide is only going to widen as society changes. Our countryside will end up being irrelevant to the country that actually exists.
What? Our countryside will be irrelevant to the country that actually exists. Now, I can't tell shit from shinola most times, but I don't know what he meant by that. Do you know what he meant by that?
Today, then the divide is only going to widen as society changes. Our countryside will end up being irrelevant to the country that actually exists. I'm a scout ambassador and I work with the National Trust.
He's a scout ambassador. They let blacks in the scouts.
Both organisations are working to get more diversity into the outdoors.
Yes, let's get more diversity into the outdoors. You can only laugh because if you don't, you will go insane. The countryside isn't inclusive. It's not a welcoming place for blacks. Cadbury, look over there. It's the lesser-spotted black in our countryside. Fetch the nets and we'll catch him. Tally-ho! Mad shit, this. Mad shit. And weddings today. That actually went out on the BBC on Sunday. And nobody laughed because it wasn't a wind-up. Weddings all change at weddings now. Here comes the bride, but she won't have her daddy by her side. See what I did there? Full of fun today. Couples should whisper their vows during wedding ceremonies. Whisper their vows. And they should wash their hands before exchanging rings and after exchanging them. Fathers will be barred from walking their daughters down the aisle if they are from different households. While receptions are strongly advised against and should be limited to two households. No wedding receptions now. No. Whisper your vows. Wash your hands two or three times during the ring exchanging ceremony. And this is all real. And we're trending on Twitter about a guy with the worst hairstyle ever seen in professional football. And this real stuff is actually going on. From the 4th of July, 30 people allowed to attend the ceremony. And the ceremonies will have to be conducted in the shortest possible time. I love it. Welcome, dearly gathered. How you doing? You. Yeah, you. Yeah, do you take him? Do you take her? Yes, I pronounce you man and wife. Now fuck off. Lovely. Singing, touching, and the use of instruments that are blown into, also banned. No singing because you project spittle. And you can't use woodwind instruments, no. And couples getting married are advised not to give their spoken responses with a raised voice. So whisper the vows. Oh, so if I ever do get married to the oft-mentioned future missus, it'll be fun, won't it? Imagine, how would that go? I should have got her to help me out. I should have brought her up here, up to studio, whispering the vows. I, Richie Allen. Hey, Caroline. Seeing as we can whisper, did you change your mammy's colostomy bag before showing her to her pew? There's a terrible smell in the chapel. health and honour. It's mental. It's a fucking tyranny, this. We shouldn't be laughing at it. It's a tyranny. Politicians and the police threatening you. This is what you can do when you get married. Daddy, you're not walking your girl down the aisle. I bet you the feminists love that, though. I bet you the feminists are thrilled. Feminazis. And if we let them away with it, if we let them away with it, whispering your vows, washing your hands before the fucking ring is given to her, and then washing them again before she gives you her ring. If we allow them away with it, before too long, you'll be getting married. And this will happen.
I come to claim the right of Prima Nocta. As lord of these lands, I will bless this marriage by taking the bride into my bed on the first night of her union.
Yes, Prima Nocta will be evoked. Invoked. Yes, Prima Nocta. I love Braveheart. I was rooting for Longshanks. I know, how could an Irish Republican root for an English king in Braveheart? I was rooting for him because he was so evil. Archers? But sir, we'll hit our own men. Yes, but we'll hit theirs as well. Loved a bit of that. I'll tell you what these localised lockdowns are all about. Right, so they've told Leicester, no, you're not going for a pint on Saturday, and she's not going to have her highlights done. You've got to wait 2 more weeks. I'll tell you what these localised lockdowns are all about. They're all about making us beg for compulsory masks. So you dangle the reopening of pubs and hairdressers. Dangle it out there. There you are, eh? Pubs opening, eh? Hairdressers. And then withdraw it a little bit. Hang on there. Still a bit dangerous. And eventually we'll take anything. And they're going to say, you can only have this partial easing of the lockdown if you wear masks all the time outside. So here's Peter Drobatch, global health and infectious disease expert. He's head of some college or other at Oxford Uni. Of course he is. Sky News and the BBC use him all the time. Oxford's guy, Peter Drobatch, talking to Colin Brazier about masks. And then you'll understand why I believe the localised lockdowns are to get us to go along with the masks. Have a listen.
Would it help in terms of the collective psychology if there was a fiat from maybe from central government saying, look, now's the time to put on a face mask. We can dispute the sort of clinical efficacy of it, but just in terms of a message, of a strong, strong message that it would communicate to the people of Leicester, it would be worthwhile.
Even beyond Leicester, I frankly think across the country, particularly if we're going to proceed with opening up. This wasn't the case a couple of months ago at the beginning of the pandemic, but certainly now we have good evidence actually that universal face coverings can be a very powerful tool to slowing the spread of COVID-19. So as we all contemplate moving out and gathering in public spaces, especially yeah. indoor spaces, I think it actually would be very, very beneficial if mask wearing became the norm rather than the exception. And that's been talked about a little bit by government.
Yeah. And that's it in a nutshell, isn't it?
Bring in public spaces, especially indoor spaces. I think it actually would be very, very beneficial if mask wearing became the norm rather than the exception. And that's been talked about a little bit by government, but it's never been emphasized. And you see that by the really sporadic mask wearing that you see in public. So this is an underutilized tool.
Yeah, very helpful. The presenter there putting ideas in his head. You see, these are not interviews. These are dances. It's a dance between the presenter, whom appears to be a journalist who's asking some questions. But it's not. It's beautifully choreographed. About 60 seconds before that, listen to the presenter, Colin Brazier, in the same interview, 60 seconds earlier.
Clearly, public health messaging has a role to play here. People need to be persuaded to abide by the rules, not just jump in their cars and head off to stay with relatives outside of the exclusion zone, if what? You call it that. And just how, for instance, the police handle things.
Wow. Clearly people have to do this. And then he introduces exclusion zone. It's all very dystopian, isn't it? Listen again, because it's important. This is the presenter now. He's supposed to be challenging this stuff. At least appearing to challenge it. Right?
Clearly, public health messaging has...
Clearly, public health messaging has a role to play. Clearly, he says.
Clearly, public health messaging has a role to play here. People need to be persuaded.
People need to be persuaded.
To abide by the rules. Not just jump in their cars and head off to stay with relatives outside of the exclusion zone.
Radio 5 Live this morning, Nicky Campbell, former three-time virtue signalling champion of the world, still holds the world record for saying he always looks out for Britney Spears' well-being. Arsehole. Nicky Campbell. This morning, though, he was interviewing Leeds University virologist Stephen Griffin. And Nicky Campbell had some bad news for us, because there are more pandemics on the way, and they'll be here really soon.
Right. The news we all wanted to hear. A new strain of flu that has the potential to become a pandemic has been...
A new strain of flu.
...has been identified in China, emerging and carried by pigs. Lots of questions, of course, about the appalling animal welfare standards in China. Anyone who's seen how the pigs are, the pork is produced and pigs are kept, it's horrifying. There will be questions about that. Researchers are concerned it could mutate further. Are we looking at pandemic after pandemic?
Well, there's always a risk of a pandemic, and pandemics generally occur when a virus jumps that barrier between species. And we know from the H1N1 outbreak in 2009, the swine flu outbreak, that the pigs are what we call a mixing vessel for influenza viruses. Now, that means that the pigs can be infected.
Did you know that pigs are a mixing vessel for viruses?
Pigs can be infected with more than one type of virus. And because of the nature of that virus, parts of the genetic information can swap over. Now, it's important to say that there are many stages to a virus causing a pandemic, and the first stage of that is a sort of localized transmission into people, such as we're seeing here. It takes more than that for a virus to establish itself within humans and to pass on readily between humans.
How do you stop it? How do you stop that? How do you clamp down on it? Nip it in
the
bud.
The sorts of measures that we would have seen early on.
Yeah, just let's leave it there. They've introduced today the notion that another pandemic is on the way. It could be on the way. It's a flu strain. It could be deadly. Lockdown, lockdown, localised lockdown. And eventually the perplexed. Let's not call them sheep. There was a time when our heads were buried in the same mire, in the same quicksand. They're perplexed. Well, they'll just go along with anything. We'll go along with anything. Anything to avoid being trapped at home forevermore. Yes, we'll wear masks. Yes, we'll take the vaccine. Yes, we'll have the digital health passport. Yes, we will. Anything to get us out and about and to get some semblance of normality back in our lives. Anything. This is Elvis Presley on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Back with Hayden Hewitt. One of the best nights out I ever had in my life was in Marbella back in 2011. And I was lucky enough to meet several members of the TCB band. Ronnie Tutt, one of the greatest drummers of all time. The piano player Glenn Harden, Glenn D. Harden to his friends, and James Burton were at the Palacio del Congresos in Marbella, and I was there with VIP tickets given to us free at the radio station in Spain, and I never enjoyed myself as much. We also met Jerry Schilling, who was a bodyguard and a great friend of Elvis's for a long time as well. Great night out that was. Stephen King has waded in to the row between women and some transgender activists. We talked about this briefly yesterday. I won't bore you. Basically, J.K. Rowling was in a bit of an argument with a Labour MP, and he'd been critical of her using her experiences of domestic and sexual abuse to be transphobic. He said, you're using, you know, what happened to you to be transphobic. She said, no, women should always be able to speak about their experiences. And Stephen King retweeted that. JK thought, oh, lovely, he's sticking up for me. She sent a very gushing tweet back to Stephen. A few minutes later, though, Stephen confirmed that, yes, trans women are women, and Rowling deleted her tweet. It's It's maybe more serious than my glibness might suggest this issue. And a very good friend of mine, whom I've known for many years now, big supporter of the independent media, the co-founder of LiveLeak.com, and the man behind Trigger Warning TV, which you can watch on YouTube. It's youtube.com/Trigger Warning TV. And that platform carries this program and many others as well. And he's been, not only has he been commenting and actively engaging people on social media about this, but he's also been doing a lot of research into it as well and other issues. So it's a big welcome back to my friend Hayden Hewitt. Welcome back.
Hey, Richie, thank you very much for having me.
It's an honour to have you.
Of course it is.
It always is. What was Stephen King doing getting involved? I mean, there is an irony here. Both you and I are huge fans of King, and we've read all his books and we think he's great. What's going on?
I remain a huge fan of Stephen King. I don't care what his opinion is on trans people are, but it's kind of this whole thing's been brewing for a while, hasn't it? And as you know, I've done shows on the past about gender ideology and things like that. I've never paid super close attention because I didn't want to get involved in anything particularly. But a few weeks ago, I decided to get involved in a few things much more aggressively, shall we say, because it's not that easy to cancel me. So, you know, what's the worst they can do? Ban me from Twitter.
Yeah.
So we hosted the debate between Representative We Are Fair Cop and a trans activist.
Very good, by the way. Congratulations. It was a brilliant
watch. Thank you. But I was biting my lip through that because I'm not used to not talking and telling everyone what I think. But I did that, and I started paying more attention to Graham Linehan, you know, the writer of Father Ted Black Books, former beloved internet leftist personality and currently the Irish Hitler, as you know. And I decided to look into all of it a bit deeper, but including him. And I thought, well, there's a guy who was traditionally incredibly leftist, who I disagreed with on many things, but he's flushed his career down the toilet. Pretty much.
Has he? Is it over?
I don't know, I'm not a friend of the guy, but I'm going to imagine that he's got an uphill trek ahead of him. You know, I don't know the guy terribly well.
So he could write the next Only Fools and Horses, but because of what's been going on, he might find it difficult.
Yeah, I imagine the Loveys probably wouldn't want to work with him. Well, I mean, I spoke to a journalist last night. She's been in it all her working life, but because she spoke up about this issue, she's no longer getting commissions. This is someone that's worked for pretty big magazines, you know. People are frightened. So I looked at a guy who had flushed what is essentially a very lucrative career down the toilet after being tremendously left-leaning previously with the Gamergate thing and Count Dankula and other stuff. And then I had a proper look and I watched an appalling movement of bullying women. The most appalling harassment and bullying.
Give us an example.
TERFs. You know, trans exclusionary radical feminists.
Yeah.
Which apparently I am one now as well. So I'm like the king of the feminists or something, I guess. There's a popular phrase, I'm sure. And I thought, well, I can't just stand by. I don't have much of a voice, but I can't stand by. And then I watch people being removed from Medium for gender critical articles. And I'm not talking about attacking trans people. We know there are people out there that just hate trans people for being trans. But then I look more into, after hearing some on the debate, how all these adult trans people trying to transition, trying to, you know, live their best life kind of thing, have to follow these rules. And there's so many obstacles in the way, and so many of them end up self-medicating, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
Because they're not allowed to get to the medication until they've lived as a woman. But to live as a woman, they have to access female spaces, which, of course, is a problem. Not because of most trans people as we might think of trans people, because they've been accepted for a long, long time. It's this creeping insistence that trans woman is a woman, which on the surface sounds perfectly innocent to some. But that's being applied big hairy ass blokes that have got no intention of transitioning beyond saying, I am a woman. And women don't want them in their spaces, and that's their business. But when they say that, they're attacked. So J.K. Rowling, has said nothing anti-trans. She's not erase them. I hate that phrase. You're erasing my existence. I mean, come on. How?
Yeah.
If I had a button that did that, there'd be nobody left.
Yeah.
Not just trans people.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, just start again. You know, but J.K. Rowling was subjected to a level of abuse I couldn't even imagine. And Stephen King, like I say, he waded in and then waded right back out.
Straight back out.
When you wade in there, well, even on my level, let's say, I put up a post talking about the people that were, that they, when Graham Linehan was banned. By the way, do you know what his final tweet that he was banned for?
Well, can you clear it up for me? Because I've heard two or three versions. Which one?
Well, I've heard it from him. Men aren't women. Though,
T-H-O, that's the one, yeah. Yeah.
That's it. That was his final. Yeah. Now, some people said it's, well, it's because he's been harassing people for years. Has he really, when you look through it? Yes. Granted, sometimes he can be a little clumsy with it, but the guy's passionate. What are you going to do?
I like him, Hayden, but he's, in the past, he's campaigned fairly vigorously for people who might identify as white supremacists to be deleted. And he has. Yeah, well,
here's the thing, though. You know, I would love to talk to him about all that as well.
Yeah.
It in no way invalidates.
No, it doesn't. Look at me. Yeah. But it's important, though, you know, because, hey, listen, you and I have banged heads over the years, me and you, about the issues that we don't agree with. And we always say, you and I, that no matter what people think, we would never delete them. So all I'm saying is, I'm certainly not saying, I'm not saying na-na-na-na-na to Graham, but what I'm saying is, look, Graham, the old adage of, they came for the Jews, I did nothing, they came for blacks and I did nothing, I know I'm paraphrasing it now, but it's important to keep it in mind, isn't it?
And I imagine, and again, I don't really speak to the guy much, but I imagine that there will have been some element on his road to Damascus, of realizing the people that perhaps, you know, he used to support and be around, because they sure as shit turned on him pretty quickly, you know? So, yeah. You know, I benefit of the doubt, you know, but all I can look at is right now. I can't, you know, like I say, I don't have to defend him. He's big enough and ugly enough to look after himself. But it gets me that someone has been so taken out of context. Then Rowling happened. And that was taken wildly out of context. The abuse continues now. Even she ran this competition for children to draw pictures for the book. They're just attacking posts on there. Well, what are you doing? This is for kids. And you click on the profiles. And do you know what? Most of them aren't even trans people. They're just blokes with beards who think they're allies. But at the end of this, if the pendulum swings back, the only victims at the end of this are going to be women and trans people, because those activists are just going to, well, pack up and go and look at somebody else.
Look at somebody else,
Find another minority to be their pet project to do as they're told.
Now, Jean-Anne Crowley, the actress, says it's misogyny by another name, this. Is it?
Oh, not another name. It's just misogyny. It's plain and simple. It's blokes telling women what to do, and when a woman says, I'm not comfortable with this, saying, well, shut up, put up with it, or you're evil. And that's the way trans woman is a woman, is now framed, because if you dare go, well, I don't see it that way. It's not even good enough to say, well, I'll treat you as one, I'll refer to you as one, that's fine, but I don't think of you as a woman, you know? Some I've had perfectly reasonable conversations with. You know, we get quite a few watch the show. It doesn't matter, because I think the majority aren't these animals on Twitter that are running around cancelling everybody and attacking everybody. So I'm not surprised Stephen King said what he did. Maybe he believes it. Maybe he said trans women are women.
I mean, he must be in his 70s now. I doubt very much he really believes that trans
women
are women.
But even if he doesn't, I get it.
Oh, so do I. Jeez, look, we know the consequences, yeah.
The other night, so as a this is how I learned in my own small way. You know, over the years, I've dealt with more problems than these sort of pillow-humping incels could ever give me.
Yeah.
But I was on there the other night, and I pointed out, well, I don't think Glenna is, you know, Graham Linehan's necessarily evil at all. You know, all humans are flawed, but he's absolutely spot on this, and stopped going on his site, because they all piled on his site after he was banned and flooded it with the most revolting pornography, misogynistic comments, racist comments. They were hammering it because they're, you know, just trolls. But because I said this, there was a little pile on me, which passed a couple of hours. But a few of them decided to start accusing me, well, you distribute child porn through Live League.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up. This is hugely serious.
Yeah.
This so is deadly serious.
I thought, okay, I've been accused of the same and worse over the years. Usually, you know, because, you know, dickheads are going to dickhead, aren't they? You know, you just let it go. But I thought, Twitter have been banning people just for calling someone a groomer. I wonder. Now, yeah, I know, you know, you could lawyer up, you could serve papers to Twitter, get the timestamps, the IPs, and if they're not using a VPN, you can get them. But to be honest, for what?
And nobody has the money to do that anyway. None of us has the money to do that.
Who has the patience? Because there's no money at the end of it. Even what they've done is libel. Well, then what if they're broke? You know, and also, it achieves nothing for me to do that. But I reported them to Twitter because I thought, well, I'll see what happens.
Yeah. What did happen?
Nothing. I've not heard anything. So far, I'm still waiting. I assume Twitter are very busy dealing with misgendering and weighing up whether they're going to join in the purge of Reddit and YouTube and all the rest. I mean, I had to stick up for Stefan Molyneux.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's an important story that he's been kicked off YouTube, hasn't he?
Like rubbing dust in my eyes. He's a detestable man, but... You know, how can I not support his right to speak? How else would I? And they act as if this is a victory. This is what drives me insane. You're pushing them off platforms. And what happens if you look at any Twitter alternative platform? All the people banned from Twitter go there, so you just end up with a different echo chamber. And if you didn't like some of these people when you got them cancelled and had your little party and hashtag love always wins and all this, you're really going to hate them when they come back because they've got all new friends who are much more unreasonable but very supportive. You know, if you keep pushing people to the right, one day you're going to find out the right's a lot bigger than it used to be. I mean, there definitely is on social media a push to silence the conservative voice. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, regardless of your own opinion. I understand that.
And all you're doing is pushing them into the arms of ever more extreme people.
And it's deliberate, in my opinion. I know you might see it differently. I think it's deliberate.
I mean, it's things like with the trans thing, where it does fall into an area you more get your teeth into, is we've got these adults, these people that genuinely can't live as they do. Genuinely, they want to live as the gender or say or whatever it is this week. They want to live as that to be happy, and fair for good luck to them. But they're being waiting lists and refused treatment and all this. Yet we're in a tremendous rush to pump kids full of this shit. So yeah, there is something there, and it all ties in because, as you know, I've been researching for a series of shows on the online paedophilia thing, which is becoming ever more accepted by platforms.
Now hold that thought one second. This is really important. I just want to just very quickly recap. Hayden Hewitt is our guest. You need to check out triggerwarning.tv, the website, and youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. There's no dot there. youtube.com/triggerwarningTV. We've been talking about Rowling and Stephen King, misogyny, and the stuff that women are putting up with when it comes to trying to protect their own spaces, this agenda, where it's going. And Hayden has said that it kind of segues into this other thing that he's looking into, and this is really important because this made the national press over the weekend. I want to give you a bit of credit here. Hayden has been onto this paedophiles operating in the open on Twitter. He's been on to this for quite a while, ahead of the curve before most people. And at the weekend I learned a new phrase, minor attracted persons.
Oh, they come in varieties. No, you got MAPS, minor attracted persons, no MAPS, non-offending minor attracted persons. Then you have pro-C MAPS, which are pro-contact minor attracted persons. Now, they all use the same playbook, and I'm not drawing a parallel here between trans people and paedophiles, because you don't do that. It's like, you know, it's the old thing, isn't it? Gay people are paedophiles.
Yeah,
of course they're not. However, the activism playbook is being used by trans activists. You have to draw a distinction. Trans activists, MAPS, or paedophiles, zoophiles, they use exactly the same playbook. Find a couple of bits of science. You only need one or two that vaguely support what you're doing, and then manipulate it and use it to bludgeon other people to death. And that's how they're operating online, with the full permission of the platforms, because Twitter, for example, was sent a letter signed by several noted psychologists that it's better for the maps to be able to congregate and offer each other support.
On Twitter?
On Twitter. Now, you would be insane to say there aren't non-offending paedophiles. I would say the majority will never go on to offend. And I know for a fact, I'm sure, it has to be the case, there are some that the idea of acting on these impulses would kill them.
How can you possibly say, what evidence have you got to support the contention that most people who are attracted to children don't go on to offend or wouldn't offend?
It's purely statistics. It's a very small ratio that are found to offend. Now, caveat, small study groups, because who wants to admit to being a paedophile, and also how many were caught, but still the majority seem not to actively offend. This does not include consuming child sexual abuse material or anything like that, which is offending, but it's so hard to break these figures down because they're very small subject groups. It's been smashed down by psychologists and psychiatrists, and at the end of it you're going, I don't know what to think. But here's one thing I do know. No matter how many of them are genuine, if you go and look at those communities on Twitter, all they talk about all day is either how virtuous they are, the age of consent, or a hell of a lot of them are doing link shares. And I don't know what's in these links they are sharing, but seeing as over half of all the child porn discovered in the UK was found on Twitter, I'm going to go out on a limb here. And this is accepted. If you go and attack them directly, you could get banned. Paedophiles, you know, it's, and again, I don't want to draw a parallel between trans people and paedophiles. I really want to avoid that because it's a nasty thing that you got to be very careful.
Yeah, but there is a scenario whereby somebody who is attracted to children might see a window of opportunity.
No, that's exactly the problem.
Right.
That's exactly the problem because the self-ID laws that have come in on the back of this. So a year, 2 years ago, if someone said trans women are women, you might well have gone, yeah, all right, whatever. I'm not attracted to them. I think the blokes, but whatever. Doesn't bother me. Live your best life. Most women didn't care if they used the toilets because they were transitioning individuals, you know? If someone presents as a woman, women, the majority seem to not care. And that's what a lot of polls are based on. Excuse me, but now we're seeing this change of self-identification and people that have got no intention of even presenting as women. So if these laws that they want went through, and it was a very close call, I could go to swimming baths and say, no, I'm a woman, I'm getting changed in there. Now, some have said, well, people would go in anyway, and there's a big difference between a voyeur or a rapist that forces their way in and carries out the act. They're criminals. You never stop criminals. If you expect laws only to be passed because it will stop a criminal activity, you're very naive.
Yeah.
But what this does is give them the permission to sit in there and go, no, you can't throw me out of here.
That's the window of opportunity. Hey, listen, some of our listeners are not happy with the answer you gave me about statistics, about people attracted to children. The majority wouldn't offend. I believe you've seen statistics like that because I know you're an honest broker, my good friend. But I'm skeptical as well.
I could say to your listeners,
yeah,
as an individual, as a human being, they all absolutely repulse me to a point you could scarce believe. But I can only go by the figures that are available. That's all I can do if I'm going to try and be objective, which you have to be when you're researching, because you'll never learn if you learn subjectively. You know that, Richie. And
you're right.
If you look at the estimated percentage of paedophiles in society, if they were all active offenders, it would be far worse. Now, my contention, and I'm not a psychologist, is if we keep letting them congregate, it will get worse. If we keep letting them share in the open and want acceptance, then they get allies.
They get allies, yeah.
Well, these could be nice people. No, I don't care how nice you are. you're here putting hashtag Map Pride.
Map what Pride,
have you got,
yeah.
What have you got to be proud of? Go. You know, but a lot of them, again, we're in this situation, aren't we? On a visceral level, you're thinking, well, you know, just put them in a mincer and be done with it. But on a real level, it's very hard for them to get any kind of treatment until they've offended.
Until they've broken the law. What?
It's hard to push for more treatment because everyone's like, well, screw them. I don't want to help them. And it is difficult. It is difficult, but I cannot for the life of me see how allowing them to congregate in the open is helping anybody. Because here's the thing. Twitter is open to people from 13 up.
And it hasn't addressed it.
Allowing paedophiles to mix with kids.
Yeah, openly.
It's like if you were an alcoholic and I said, here's the keys to me pub, will you look after it for a bit?
And you're telling me today that the platform itself, Jack or whatever the bloody hell it is, hasn't addressed this at all, hasn't responded to it?
No, they did. They directly changed the rules to allow it.
To allow it.
They directly altered the rules on the site. I think it was a year or two ago. I should have it in front of me, but I've been on other things the last couple of days. But they directly altered the rules to say discussion of these things, providing you don't glorify it, is perfectly acceptable. They carved a niche for paedophiles because this psychologist sent them a letter recommending it. And then you look into these psychologists, some of them have got connections to organizations that you wouldn't want involved in anything.
Give us an example.
There's one in California that I'm looking into. I'm not going to name them just yet.
Okay.
I don't want to trigger them just yet. But the organizations where, let's say, they make out that they are for the protection of children, yet their board of directors, their specialists, none of them are child protection experts. None of them. And the deeper you get into it, the filthier it gets. And when you talk to journalists from, let's say, Canada, who have volumes of information, but they daren't utter it because they live in Canada, they would be screwed into the ground. So this reach is really quite deep. It's not like Pi. It's not like Pi at all, because Pi was all chips in, you know, all chips in. No, they have a plan. There is a distinct plan of attack for small outrages, back off, push further, distract, push further, use this language. A paedophile manifesto was posted on Reddit, so you can take that with as many pinches of salt as you like. However, whilst I don't believe pedos are all reading this manifesto, they're following it. So someone's been telling people, and someone's influencing people, and there is this push, again, to make it acceptable to be a paedophile because it's a sexual urge that you don't control.
You know, in Germany today, the police there gave a press conference. Well, it sounds very silly of me to say the police in Germany. But the national police said today they believe that one particular network in Germany might have as many as 30,000 people involved in it.
I believe that. No problem. From what I've seen online, I've got no issue.
One network of people sharing images of children.
Well, then you see them have a debate. You see them have debates of, some of these are the more moderate ones. Moderate paedophile, Jesus wept. You see them having debates like, well, should you go to prison for watching child porn? Now, for me, yes, you should.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course you should. But they're just the working for ways. And, you know, as ever is the case, like with the trans activists, the majority of trans people are not full-blown activists that attack every woman that disagrees with them. But there's always people that go further. With paedophiles, there seem to be a larger proportion of them because they're more driven by a sexual urge as opposed to, you know, a need to be something else. And they are really on it, Richie. I mean, if you engage them, they're not stupid. You know, these are cunning, manipulative liars.
And are children being sexualized in our primary schools, Hayden?
But I have to poke them with sticks
yeah.
to react to the brighter ones. They always do, every time. But it takes a while.
And they're happy. Are some of these people expressing, I think we talked about this before, I know you're investigating this for future programmes. Will some of these people appear with you and talk about it?
Not so far, no. Not so far. But I'm hoping one will, because, you know, I'll show them. It's not like I'm going to bring someone and just scream at them.
Yeah, of course. I know. That's why I asked, yeah.
It would achieve nothing. But at the same time, as weak as this sounds, if one said they'd come on, I'd have them on. But I also have to think about, will I be able to? You know, I'm a father.
Yeah, but you're a professional. You can do it. Let me ask you this. I've got because we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left. This is really, I'm glad we scratched the surface of this with you, because this is an area of research that you've been looking into for quite some time. And I know the listeners of this program will be following this now from now on in. Many of our listeners follow you anyway, but this is so important. Look, I've had people on over the years, some of them with not the greatest amount of empirical evidence, but others with a lot of evidence. They talk to me about Epstein, they talk to me about the Clinton Foundation, disaster capitalism, preying on children, and that amongst nobility, and certainly in amongst very, very wealthy people, child trafficking is something that's going on, and most people maybe don't have any idea of the scale of it. I believe it is a thing. That's an area that I've been reading about for a long, long, long time, going back to the Franklin Credit Union scandal and the famous ITV documentary. That was not a hoax, that was going on. Lawrence E. King was trafficking children all around America, the most powerful black politician in the United States at that time, from that orphanage. I believe it's going on. I believe there's enough evidence to support charges being brought against the Clinton Foundation and people working for it. We know that Oxfam and some of these other major charities, this is huge, isn't it? Child trafficking.
Yeah,
it's massive,
but what
they
do is they'll throw the odd sacrificial lamb to the press every once in a while.
And it'll never reach the likes of Bill or Hillary.
Oh,
or any
no, why would it? I mean, you know, the powerful all around the world indulge in whatever their passions are. And, you know, with a lot of people, to reach the top of anything, you have to have the ability at least to switch your empathy off. In most businesses and things like that. And people who can switch their empathy off are people that are terrifying, because they're also known as psychopaths. Psychopathy is, of course, that's genuinely a spectrum. But imagine you're a position where you're someone that's switched off the empathy, clawed to the top of your league, and you want to satisfy yourself. You've tried everything. And you think, kids are like kids. You start, and no one can touch you. And if you're untouchable, what's going to stop you is going to escalate. You're going to look for people that are like you. You're going to bring other people into it. But what doesn't help is when you get these, you know, the theories about, oh, the tents were set up in New York, they're pulling all the tunnel children out. And all. That's just running cover for them. Because it's never that adventurous. Have you ever noticed that? Even with Epstein, it was never, he just bundled them onto a plane.
Yeah.
Took them somewhere. Stop looking for the James Bond answer to everything. Because they don't need to hide it. They'll do it in plain sight. Because we're too busy looking for the hollowed out volcano with the man stroking his white cat in it. This stuff goes on in plain sight. And you can't deny it. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's right there. And every once in a while, have you noticed how we only ever find out it's dead politicians that were at it?
Yeah.
Of course you have. Because they're the ones you can just, oh, there you go, have that.
Leon Britton losing the Dickens dossier, as you do. You're given a dossier with the names of, you know, high-profile politicians. I think the Edward Heath stuff is a slam dunk. I think that those who have given testimony about that, Heath himself didn't murder those children. I don't believe he did, but children were killed so they would never speak about what happened to them on the morning cloud.
It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to give this stuff headspace. You know, why do we believe that somehow the people above us are virtuous? Because all the evidence suggests the opposite in almost every aspect of life. And if you give bad people a lot of power, they do a lot of bad things. We should not be surprised, and yet still we hide away from it. Because I think a lot of it is people don't want to see it. And some people want to see it too much.
Yeah.
And start connecting dots to suit themselves. And like I say, that's every bit the distraction that the press ignoring it is.
I saw a very interesting interview with Robbie Williams. I think he spoke to Anna Breith. She was on this programme before, former ITV journalist. Does some interesting stuff. She does some interesting stuff. Other stuff not so interesting. But she interviewed Robbie Williams, which is a bit of a scoop, really. Mm. And as far as the satanic stuff goes, I think Williams has heard enough and seen enough that it goes on. I want to say this. The types of people, and this is not an Irish Republican speaking, this is a human being speaking. I believe these noble classes, these moneyed classes, you know, old money. I think you're bang on when you talk about lack of empathy. I think you make a very good point. But there's also a class of people that are sadistic. These are the types of people that engage in rituals, like putting squabs in people's buttocks until the pigeons die. You know, weird people. And again, this is, I'm not segueing off into a mad dimension here. There's a lot of sadism. And of course, I interviewed a couple of years back. I sound like Raymond from Rain Man. Of course, I interviewed. I interviewed, I can't remember his name now, but a very well-known man who wrote a book about his own experiences in boarding schools. And this wasn't 10-year-old children doing unspeakable things to 10-year-old children. It was older boys doing unspeakable things to children in boarding schools for sadistic purposes. And that would, you know...
Well, it goes all the way through. I mean, I'm not going to name names because it's a bit pointless at this time, but a friend of mine, his son, was in the Royal Guards. He was only about 19, and he bumped into a very high-profile politician who said, you know, you and your friend must come and see me. I'll introduce you to some people. It'll progress your career. And he happened to get in touch with me. And I, no, don't go anywhere near these people, whatever you do. 19 years old, you're still a kid. You're still a kid. They had nefarious purposes. Why would someone in their late 60s, early 70s want anything to do with a fresh-faced 19-year-old squaddy fresh from home? No, it's riddled with it. And, you know, I'm not sure about the whole satanic thing because I don't think religion's got a lot to do with it. But do they do sadistic practices? Of course. Of course. If you're going to be willing to rape a child, you're willing to do pretty much anything that comes into your mind because you've got the power. You've got the power and you can get away with it. So you're going to do it. And that's exactly what they do. And it's going to carry on. And it's going to carry on as long as it's ignored by the mainstream and as long as we completely overshoot the target on the other side. It's a bit of a lose-lose on it. I'd love to have something more positive.
Yeah, but you're only beginning, I mean, you've been ahead of the rest of the independent media on the emergence of paedophiles on social media and minor attracted persons and all of this nonsense. So it'll be interesting to see what you manage to find out in the coming weeks and months, because it's hugely important.
And just remember, Richie, if I fall off a boat and drown, I hate the fucking sea. I'd never have gone near it. They killed me, all right?
The irony, huh? The Clinton body count, Hayden Hewitt, the man who said the Clinton body count was a conspiracy. No, you never said it was a conspiracy.
No, I never said that.
You never
I said I didn't know.
You didn't
know.
There's
a big difference. A lot of people get offended when I say that, and I don't know why. I'm just being honest.
Because you're a gatekeeping shill. We don't know that.
Yeah,
that's
well,
the way it works.
We know that, but in the minute there's a problem, there's a contractual muddle between the Israelis, the Russians, and the patriarchy. So I'm not getting paid, dude. I've got to make my own way. But I think, because I'm going to have to go for tea in a minute, but I'd like to leave you with something to cheer you up.
By the way, folks, that's as Manchester as it gets. I'm going to go for tea.
I'm going to have my
He's going to have his dinner. And if Mancunians ever get around to accepting that it's dinner time now, not tea time, we might take over the world.
Hang on. I'm going to be lectured on English by an Irish.
By an
Irish. No, I'm not,
yeah.
sir.
Yeah.
How dare you.
Tea time it is.
I just want to leave you with something that will make you happy.
Go on.
If you're feeling down, and this goes for your listeners, if you're feeling down.
If you mention Liverpool, I'll kill you. Go on.
No, I'm not mentioning Liverpool at all. If you're feeling down and that the universe is trying to crush you and nothing goes right, just have a think about all those grown adults looking at those Harry Potter tattoos on their arms and they're in tears. They're in tears. Enjoy it.
Where's the Brillo pads? Where's the Brillo pads? I'm sure I can get rid of this tattoo with a Brillo pad. Listen, mate, brilliant work you're doing. And there's more to come in terms of new platforms. We'll talk
new
about
platform.
That in due
it goes
course.
Into beta this week, closed beta.
Yeah, it's great.
Hopefully later this week for about 50 people, and we'll see how it flies.
Legend, are you on later on? I know Thursday's a big show.
I'm planning on it. I really want to. it's just up in the air at the minute, depending on what I can get done. And I want to spend time with the family. But it'd be nice. If I don't do it, Graham will.
Brilliant.
Oh, and also I've got to say,
love Graham.
Gotta
give Graham Booth.
7 o'clock over on Trigger Warning Radio. It's Natalie's metal show.
Yes.
The interlude.
I was going to plug it later on. Natalie Stacey.
I'm just getting right in.
No, it's good. Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned it.
Said, if you like metal, you'll adore that show. It's awesome.
Metal is the devil, Hayden. But no, it isn't. And she's brilliant.
Thank you very much.
You're a top man. Triggerwarning.tv, liveleak.com, and youtube.com/triggerwarning. Go and have your tea. Cheers, mate.
Take care, fella.
Speak soon. Bye for now. That's remarkably important work he's doing there. Not just the investigation of the misogyny coming from these crazed activists, you know, trans activists taking on women and invading women's spaces and trying to change the paradigm around what it is to be a woman. Dangerous stuff, this. Of course, the impact it has on children, but also looking into the normalisation of paedophilia and how Twitter is getting involved in that, right? Right. Thanks to Hayden Hewitt. 2 minutes past the hour. I know, in my heart of hearts, that Dr. Vernon Coleman will phone me in a few minutes. It has to be that way. Vernon is guarding his privacy jealously because he's taken a lot of hits because of the things he's written about and said, not recently, but over the years. So how it works is he phones me from an unlisted number, which leaves, for radio producers and presenters, it's a precarious place to be. But I know I trust him. He'll be with us in a couple of minutes. It is 2 minutes past the hour. Here's Ramon and Blitzkrieg Bop, goddammit. It's not metal. It's punk. It'll do. Natalie Stacey at 7 o'clock, by the way. Triggerwarning.tv.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
And I want to give a big shout out to Mark Byerski because over the weekend he auctioned some beautiful items, some Buddhas, for the radio show and raised nearly £500 for this radio show, which is a remarkable thing because since this evil lockdown, obviously it's put people in the shit, all right, if I can be so coarse. And support for the programme has dwindled a bit, and I haven't said anything about it. I understand it. I very rarely make appeals on this programme for support. As you well know, I don't like doing it. And Mark has been incredible, not just this time, but over the years, he's been remarkable in his support, not just for this programme, but for other programmes as well. And he ended up, I believe, he ended up drawing 17 names out of the hat and he gave 17 different things, prizes, beautiful items, healing items that he's sending out to people who listen to this program. And just a big shout out to him for doing that. He was very, very, very supportive, of course, as well, of Hayden and Graham when they lost their equipment in a breakdown. Thousands of pounds worth of equipment was stolen from them in North Manchester some months ago as well. So Mark Byerski is genuinely an angel on earth. The guy can only do good for people. And I love him for it. So markbyerski.com, do check him out. He's a terrific guy. It's exactly 6.5 minutes past the hour. I'm thrilled that my next guest has agreed to come back on the programme because I really enjoyed speaking with him when he came on around about 3-4 weeks ago. He is the author of over 100 books which have sold 2 million copies, more than 2 million in this country alone. And those books have been translated into 25 languages. He is he was for many years a general practitioner, and he wrote about medicine in the national press in the UK as well. He has a medical degree, of course, isn't working as a GP anymore. But what he has been doing is he has been broadcasting via YouTube to hundreds of thousands of people who are desperate to hear something other than the tripe, I would say, that they get on BBC, Sky, Channel 4 and ITV. And he's been incredibly courageous about that, I think. And his YouTube channel, you need only look for Vernon Coleman if you haven't come across the channel. Do go and watch it. It's remarkable. It's brilliant. It's, well, it's life-changing, I think. And I'm glad to welcome him back to the programme today. Dr. Vernon Coleman, thanks for giving us your time again today. Welcome back.
My pleasure. Nice to be with you.
When you, I've been watching your videos since I heard about them, going back several weeks. And of late, your videos, I suppose, they've got very provocative titles. And that's not a criticism at all, far from it. But titles like, Vernon, your government is trying to kill you. And obviously it's a very eye-catching, a very attention-grabbing headline. Is it true? Is the government knowingly trying to kill people? Or can it be argued that these are just bad policy decisions?
I think we've gone past bad policy decisions. I think they are trying to kill. The odd thing is that YouTube took that video down today. It's only been up about 24 hours, I think.
I didn't know.
And now it's gone. And I have no idea why it's gone, because although it contains a lot of facts, which I know they don't like, and it's got a few observations and conclusions, but I always thought that's what people were expected to do. You could just sit and read the telephone directory, but that would get a bit tedious. Can I start? I'd like to, if you like, I'd like to go through some of the stuff that was in that piece that they took down.
Please do, Vernon.
To try to find why they took it down. Because one of the interesting things is that actually I've just got the, I use a script because then I get my facts absolutely spot on. And I actually said in that video, if YouTube takes down this video because I have said the unsayable, it won't change the truth. You can't banish the truth just by hiding it. The one big truth that almost nobody in the mainstream media ever mentions are the figures. Yesterday, or was it the day before? I can't remember. The BBC website, I always put gloves and galoshes on when I go to the BBC website because it's such an unpleasant place. But I went there and their headline screaming at me was the number of coronavirus infections around the world had reached 10 million. Now, this was clearly to show us what a dangerous and infective disease the coronavirus is and the COVID-19 disease that's produced. Now, if you go to the World Health Organization site, for which I have equally little regard, but which does actually accumulate figures reasonably well, if you go to the WHO website, they will tell you that last year, 1 billion, that's billion with a B, 1 billion people caught the flu. Now, a billion is obviously 100 times bigger than 10 million. And the significance of that is that if you look at the death rates, forget about R numbers actually and infective numbers, the key is the death rates for any infectious disease, and the death rates for the COVID-19 and for a fairly ordinary winter flu are pretty well the same. Now anybody who doubts that has to simply look at the paper that was written, I think it was in the New England Journal of Medicine in March, by Fauci, Dr. Fauci, who you always see standing near to Donald Trump whenever he's talking about coronavirus, because he's a lead member of Trump's coronavirus team. And Fauci wrote in a paper which he published, that he thought in the end the death rates from the two diseases would turn out to be much the same, 0.1%. And since then, numerous doctors have come to exactly the same conclusion, that the death rates between the two are much the same. The difference is that the flu seems usually to attack and infect an awful lot more people. And remember that the 1 billion is just the people who were reported as having the flu. Now, you might say, well, the number of people who've died from the coronavirus is very high then. But did they die from the coronavirus? I don't think so, and nor do a vast number of doctors. The number of people who actually died from the coronavirus is much less. And, of course, you have to take out of the equation the number of old people who died in care homes because people were sent from hospital suffering from the coronavirus into a care home where there was nobody there able to look after them. You would not send somebody with raging flu into a care home. It would be considered fairly stupid. But they did that with coronavirus patients. And in many parts of the world, the people in the care homes, who weren't registered doctors, nurses, or anything else, the people in the care homes ran away. They were so terrified. In France, 40% of the people working in care homes ran away. And many of the people who died in care homes died because they didn't have anything to eat or drink, because they were lying in bed, unfed, not given fluids, and they died. Now, that's one part of the argument of the piece that I wrote saying your government wants you dead. Because I think when you deliberately send huge amounts of people with the coronavirus, or even not with the coronavirus, into care homes, having terrified the life out of the people working there, you're going to cause a lot of deaths. Because, as I said, the people working there were so terrified, they wouldn't let relatives or friends in. They wouldn't let anyone come and look, and they were, in many cases, sadly, so frightened that they didn't provide food and water for the elderly people they were supposed to be looking after. And there's pretty clear evidence that a lot of those people just died because they weren't being cared for properly. So that's one part of the equation. Now, the next thing, and I also pointed out in that video that YouTube has now taken down, I put in a pile of statistics proving that the dealing with elderly patients in this way is not anything new. For years in the UK, doctors and nurses were encouraged to follow the Liverpool care pathway, which allowed doctors and nurses to withhold food, water, and essential treatment from patients who are over 65 and regarded as expensive and as a disposable nuisance. And similar things happened in other countries. The Liverpool care pathway was rather diminished and superseded by the United Nations coming in with the bit of legislation which basically said that if someone's over 70 and they die, then they don't count for checking on for that country's health services. And so governments everywhere stopped worrying about letting old people die. And in way back in, I think it was 2005, Tony Blair's government suggested that old people should be denied the right to food and water if they fell into a coma and couldn't speak for themselves.
I can't challenge any of that because it's true. Yeah, the Liverpool Care Pathway, covered on this programme and many independent programmes, which was allegedly eventually disbanded, but it wasn't. It basically changed its name. I can't challenge what you said about the United Nations and over 70s because it's true. I'm just making this point, Dr. Coleman, because some listeners will be screaming at me to go after you and challenge it, but I won't because I know it to be true. I've done my own homework before you came on the programme today and I did watch your video. So the elderly being moved to a box labelled pretty useless, don't worry too much about them, that's been ongoing for 30 years. Maybe longer.
It has. Yes, it has, and it's just foul, to be honest. And then the United Nations, as I say, came in with this with this bizarre instruction that effectively meant that people over 70 didn't count when healthcare systems were being assessed. I'm just looking through the script of the piece I did that's just been taken down, and the only contentious bit is that the bit where I wrote the utterly loathsome Blair is after all now one of the world's richest war criminals. I don't believe in capital punishment, but we should bring back a death penalty just for him. And I suppose maybe YouTube didn't like that. I don't know. I resigned from my last Fleet Street column because of the Iraq war, because of the paper wouldn't let me print a criticism of the Iraq war. And I think that still lasts with a lot of people. The rest of that piece that YouTube took down argued that was it a pure accident that countries everywhere did this? What a coincidence it was that administrators, hospital administrators all over the world, they did exactly the same thing. So either everywhere in the world they're hiring completely stupid healthcare administrators, or it was a plan. Now, the other thing, as we know, is that the number of people who are now being denied healthcare because hospitals have shut, and in many places hospital departments are still shut because of social distancing and absurd lockdown laws. The thing is that the hospitals were shut, and now I think 2.5 million people who should have had treatment for cancer, some of them who were halfway through their chemotherapy, and some of whom were required surgery, many of whom required tests. It's fairly reliably estimated that by the autumn, 10 million people in Britain will still be will have been lost on the waiting list. Now, how are hospitals ever going to catch up with that? The answer is they won't, and that an awful lot of people are going to die because the hospitals were shut by government policy. Now, why did
Let me just jump in there, because if the health secretary Matt Hancock was here now, and of course he isn't, and he wouldn't be, but he would argue that he's been going on national television now for several weeks telling people that hospitals are open, and young doctors like Alex George and people like that, celebrity doctors, have been on ITV morning programmes saying, look, we are open for business, don't be worried, don't be scared, come and have that treatment that you need. That's what they would say.
Well, I know hospital departments that aren't open, so sorry, we'll have to disagree on that. I'm not going to name them on the radio, but I do know of hospitals and hospital departments that definitely are not open.
I'm not saying you're wrong at all. You know, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying they would argue that if they were here, they would say we're asking people to come back. I'm certainly not challenging.
You're right to do that. God, that sounds patronising. I didn't mean to say that.
No, I understand you.
the thing is, we knew. I first wrote on my website that this was a hoax. That was the title of the first video I did in March. Was calling this a hoax because it was quite clear then that Ferguson was wrong, and that all the scary predictions of 8 million people having the coronavirus in the UK or having COVID-19 in the UK and hospitals being absolutely crammed and having... that it was quite clear that that was nonsense, and that the government made the decision then to do all these things, and one of the things which happened was that hospitals were shut. Now, even if hospitals are, for the sake of argument, accept that hospitals are all open now. I don't believe they are, but let's just say they are all open now. They've been shut for March, April, May, June. So that's 4 months. So for 4 months, there's been no care. And now people are so terrified that even if hospitals are open, a lot of people aren't going there. Now, hospitals shut for that length of time, what that means is that an enormous number of people are going to die because of the lockdown. And once again, in March, it was patently obvious that what they were doing was going to kill far more people than COVID-19. And this is exactly the same all around the world. And I've written that actually the results of Ferguson's lockdown advice, which was given to America as well, is that because the economies have been shut down, as well as hospitals, the number of people who are going to die as a result of this is going to be measured in many millions, not just because of the people who've died not getting hospital care, but because of the vast numbers of people in places like Africa who now aren't going to get the food and the support that they need from the West, because the West's economy has been trashed. And so support and aid for those countries is going to be absolutely massacred. And the result is going to be that vast numbers of people in those countries, in developing countries, are going to be dead. And that's all a consequence of what's happened. But go back to the hospitals and the people who haven't been treated. If you say the government either made a huge mistake and continued with a huge mistake, and I'm not the only person who's been saying since March that this was a wildly exaggerated remedy for a disease that we at the time could see was not the plague, and which now the evidence is perfectly available that it wasn't the plague, because you've only got to look at the figures. In a bad year with the flu, 650,000 people die,
yes,
in the flu season. Now, that's a hell of a lot more than have died globally from the coronavirus now, including all the people who didn't really die of the coronavirus, but died because they weren't given postmortems or because they were thought to have. Doctors were signing death certificates and saying this person has died from the coronavirus because they had a cough or because they sneezed, not because they were ever tested, because they weren't. And people who died of almost anything for a while, in Italy, I think the figure was that over 80%, this was admitted by the doctor, I haven't got his name in front of me, but in Italy, you can check it up, it's on my website, but the doctor there said that over 80% of the people who had been put down as coronavirus deaths didn't die of the coronavirus. They died of their comorbidities. They died of the other serious diseases they'd got.
Can I ask you a question on that? Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest, vernoncoleman.com, and Vernon can stay with us for as much of the next half an hour as he likes. This is hugely important, and it's not happening anywhere else in radio in the UK today, and that's not a boast about this programme at all. It's disgusting that he's talking to me and he's not talking to BBC Greater Manchester Radio. This is a disgrace. But anyway, here he is, a qualified man, a man who served his time, written best-selling books. VernonColeman.com is his website, medical degree, successful general practitioner. I want to, just a couple of things I want to go back to, because I am getting some stick on Twitter for not challenging certain things. Now, I'm a notorious interrupter. And I challenge when a challenge is warranted. What you said about Fauci earlier on is true. Fauci wrote in the New England Journal in February, March, that this thing had a tiny, tiny, tiny mortality rate. He did. And then a few weeks later, he was standing alongside Trump in the Oval Office and he was saying something entirely different. Something stinks about this. Vernon is absolutely right. Now, I want to ask you, because you just touched on Italy there. How often over the years in your practice did you meet somebody in poor health, somebody who didn't look after himself or herself, somebody with chronic asthma or bronchial problems, and you knew, doctor, that a bad virus could be the end of them? And I want to touch on that because you never hear this on BBC or Sky or ITV. You know, how many people were in seriously bad shape anyway, that any virus, any nasty flu, you know, could turn into something that would do them in for good? And how many times over the years did you see people like that in your own practice?
Many. It was very, very common, and it always is, and it always will be, because patients who are already ill, who've got weakened respiratory systems, weakened cardiac systems, will be extra susceptible. And throughout the world, the death rate from COVID-19 Most of the people who have died have been over 80 and suffering from at least two or three other serious diseases. Now, I know that there have been pictures in the paper of younger people and children and so on, but you look on the statistics from America or the World Health Organization to find the ages of people who die from flu, and you'll see that exactly the same thing happens. Babies, children, young adults can sometimes die of the flu, and they did die of coronavirus. And again, that will always be the same. But the fact that those people died of the flu and they happened to be young doesn't mean that that's common. The most of the people who died were well over 80, and they were already ill from something else. And these are just very readily available facts.
This is hugely important, isn't it? Again, I'm not challenging what Dr. Vernon Coleman is saying, because it's true. These are the government's own facts. It is the vast majority of people over 80 with debilitating conditions and illnesses. Vernon Coleman is our guest. If they were all in lockstep, you touched on something earlier on that's hugely important, how every government seemed to be in lockstep. A lot of people, they watch your videos on YouTube, and I urge people who haven't seen Vernon Coleman on YouTube, watch the videos, bookmark the site, as long as he's there before YouTube deletes him. And I'm not saying that for dramatic effect now. Eventually they will delete his account. I mean, this is the way it goes,
they've
right?
They've taken six videos down so far without, as far as I'm aware, they put two back. I did one video that was called "Why Has YouTube Deleted My Video?", which was about censorship and free speech, and it got about 260,000 views. 260,000 views. YouTube took it down. I complained, and they were embarrassed and put it back, and it never got a view since then, as far as I know. Presumably, I don't know why. There you go.
They do delete channels. Listen, this is certainly not about me, but about 3 years ago, this program had a channel. We had nearly 100,000 subscribers. And I interviewed a conspiracy theorist in the United States of America. I challenged everything he said. I argued with him. I kept interrupting him. Did my job. But the channel was deleted because of it. Because it was about a mass shooting in America. And the guy had a theory about it. And that's what happens. I didn't get any justice. Not justice, but I got no comeback from them when I complained. Let's talk about lockstep. If this was done in lockstep, and if they have deliberately shut life down as we know it, and introduced the notion of localised lockdowns, and the police, as the health secretary said today, the police will clamp down if people dare open their businesses. Why, Dr. Vernon Coleman? Why? Because this is, again, not for drama. This terrifies. I'm not sleeping very well at the moment thinking about this. It's getting me down, and it's getting my friends down. What's really going on? Are you right? Is this part of some dystopian Orwellian plan to finally take control of people in ways that they previously only dreamed of? What's really going on, in your opinion?
I have abandoned the thought that this might be all a question of incompetence. It's just too bad and too global for it to be just levels of incompetence. The government knows very well how many people died or didn't die. They cut back on testing. They used every trick in the book to cut back on testing early on, very early on. Used every trick apart from the dog at my homework to not do the testing. So now they can do the testing. And of course, the antibody test that they're using is not terribly reliable. And all they have to do is find one or two people who test positive. We're looking for death rates. What they're looking for is that people who've got the infection, which is a completely different thing to the number of people who've died from it. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to look at the number of people who are supposed to have died in Leicester, and whether they had a lockdown there because of number of deaths, or whether they simply had a lockdown because of the number of people that they said had got it. But weeks ago, I can't remember when, but I did a video saying why there will have to be a second wave or something like that. Why there will be a second wave. They need a second wave because it's become predictable. The games that they're playing. I also did a video on how they brainwash people, the tricks they've used to brainwash people, which have been quite, they've just used a pile of old not old, but they've used a pile of standard hypnotherapy techniques to brainwash people with all these little phrases and with the clapping. It's all part of a program to get us controlled and to make us do what they want us to do. And the reason I think that they have to have a second wave is that they need to keep us oppressed and fearful and obedient because of the vaccine, the word you're not allowed to mention. When I make videos that include stuff about the vaccine, I don't use that word because otherwise the video is down in no time at all. The problem is that the powers that be are desperate, and by powers that be, we're talking Bill Gates and God knows who else, whose money goes absolutely everywhere. They are desperate to get us all to take a vaccine. I did another video about the two companies which are in the lead for producing the vaccine, and I listed all the times that they had been fined. GlaxoSmithKline is one of the companies, and the number of times that they have been fined over the last 10 years or so is absolutely terrifying. And especially when you look at the history of the chief scientist, Valance, and that becomes a little bit astonishing then, because Valance was a board director at GlaxoSmithKline until 2 years ago, and now GlaxoSmithKline is one of two companies which are in the running to make one of the world's most profitable vaccines ever. And I'd just like to know how on earth that happened. AstraZeneca is the other company, which has already started making billions of doses. And they haven't finished their tests yet. I think the government's given them the right to avoid doing any animal tests. Well, animal tests are entirely useless, because if a drug company does a test on animals and the test shows that the animal dies, gets cancer or whatever, the drug company ignores the results. I can give you the names of 50 drugs on the market which are known to cause cancer or other serious illnesses in animals. The drug companies ignore those tests because they say, well, animals are different to people, aren't they? So you might say, why do they do the test? They do the test because it's a quick way to get a drug on the market. But the government said AstraZeneca doesn't have to do that with its new vaccine. But you just look at the number of times that GSK has been fined. In 2012, they pleaded guilty to federal criminal offences.
Yeah.
They were fined $3 billion with
$3
billion,
yeah.
They were in. If you go through it, it's actually in 2010 they paid out $1.14 billion because of a claim for a drug. Endless. I've listed piles of these claims where they paid out. They even had to pay the NHS. They had to pay a fine because they were alleged to have overcharged the NHS by about $37 million. And so they ended up, I can't remember what happened, they probably got fined tuppence and a slap on the wrist. GlaxoSmithKline were actually got into trouble with in China. They were fined $490 million in China, and their former head of Chinese operations was given a suspended prison sentence. AstraZeneca, the other company, which is probably going to be making the vaccine that we're all going to be told we need to have. Don't forget, Bill Gates and everybody else says we'll get no end to this coronavirus scare, problem, crisis, whatever you call it. I call it a hoax or a crime. But they say we'll get no end to it until we've got a vaccine. Gates seems to regard himself as the doctor to the world, which is bizarre to say the least. AstraZeneca paid $110 million in 2014. They paid $350 million to resolve 23,000 lawsuits. Endless. And then there was a drug where they published a study where the person who did the study concluded that the results were inconclusive, but they published the study, which led, and the way it was done led to a national recommendation that the drug be used. Other studies showed that the drug produced harmful results, but those studies were never published. And a company email revealed, and I quote, "Thus far, we have buried trials 15, 31, 56. The larger issue is how do we face the outside world when they begin to criticize us for suppressing data," close quotes.
Gates
and another one, AstraZeneca paid $520 million dollar fine, sorry, dollars, not pounds,
yeah.
520, not that it makes a lot of difference really, does it? $520 million fine and paid $647 million to settle global lawsuits. These are the two companies who are in the running to make the vaccine that we're all going to have for a, or at least that they want us all to have. I shan't be taking it, but they want us all to have, and they're going to use all sorts of tricks to either force us or make us have it for a disease which, I remind you, has infected 10 million people compared to 1 billion people and which has already killed globally far less than an ordinary flu in a decently bad year. And that is, you can't say that's all by, well, you could, but I mean, you'd have to be a lunatic to say that was all by accident or it was all by happen chance or all just misfortune. I believe now, and I have never been a conspiracy theorist, but I believe I'm sure I am now so described, but you have to say this is something fishy going on. Actually, look at it the other way round. I think that more and more people believe there's something fishy going on, I think we've actually got there. I think over half the country now doesn't believe that this is real. In that case, the government, including Matt Hancock, they're the conspiracy theorists, because the definition of a conspiracy theorist is someone who defies the majority opinion and view on something. So Matt Hancock, you're a conspiracy theorist, Sunbeam. And he's also a terrorist in my book, because a terrorist who's somebody who uses information or tries to terrorize people with information or with violence. Well, if he's going to send police around to arrest people, that's a form of violence. And if you're going to use information to frighten people into doing something, that's a form of terrorism in my book. It's intellectual terrorism. I think we can turn the books on them. I think we're going to win this, and they're going to go home with their little tails between their legs.
I hope you're right. I mean, listening to people in Leicester, I hate to be the one to throw a damp cloth on your positive feelings there, Vernon. Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest, by the way, vernoncoleman.com. But listening to people, but again, look, I have to accept the people selected for the Vox Pops on Sky News and BBC are carefully selected. The ones that were showing today were basically, rather than criticising the government for reintroducing the full lockdown in Leicester, they were actually bitching about the people who didn't socially distance. But again, that's just media manipulation. I want to just brief, it could very well be, you know, media. I want to just briefly about Bill Gates, because on your YouTube channel, I mean, it's viral, your YouTube channel. You're getting hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views there. It's a huge success, and I'm so glad it is. You talked about charity. Here's a couple of things about Bill Gates that people don't know, or maybe they don't know. The great scientist Vandana Shiva, who's been on this program in the past, Indian woman of great intellect, has said that through chemical fertilizers and GM foods and seeds, Bill Gates is the greatest threat to farmers in the developing world. A group called Global Justice Now published a report last year which made it into the mainstream media, amazingly, and said that the Gates Foundation, far from being a neutral charitable strategy, it's actually about benefiting big business, especially in agriculture and in health, through its ideological commitment to promote neoliberal economic policies and corporate globalization. And you mentioned earlier on the donations. He donates billions, not just to a few hundred universities, but to thousands of universities and colleges and big pharma companies and NGOs. And he is the biggest contributor financially to the World Health Organization. And I've actually coined a phrase. I don't coin very many phrases, Vernon. I'm not the brightest spark in the tinderbox now, me, to be honest. But he's basically made himself the CEO of Planet Earth Health Incorporated, Planet Earth Health Inc. And you've touched on this in your own videos. through charity. He's ingeniously figured out how to shape public policy globally through funding and getting involved in various charities. And it's astonishing, really, isn't it?
He also invests in Monsanto.
Yes.
Which I've always thought to be the most evil company on the planet. Monsanto are the people who copyright seeds, and Indian farmers yeah. then can't grow them. Monsanto have just, or at least Bayer, the company which bought Monsanto, has just paid out billions for the damage caused by Roundup, which was a Monsanto...
carcinogenic, product. Yeah.
Gates, you mentioned that Gates gives money to all these people. I'm researching Gates at the moment, actually. I mean, I've known about this for ages, but, you know, he gives money to the BBC, he gives money yeah. to The Guardian.
CNN.
They have partnerships, you know, my dear. They have partnerships.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
I mean, the guy's doling his money out everywhere, and he's got all these commercial interests. The foundation seems to be a very strange mixture of charities with businesses and drug companies, and he gives money to, Imperial College, the Ferguson home, you know, where Ferguson works. Every time you look at something that looks a bit funny, you look at the list of sponsors and patrons and co-partners and whatever else you want to call it, Bill and Melinda Gates, Mrs. Melinda Gates. Why do these people think they've got the right to tell people how they should run their lives?
Yeah.
She was the other day, Melinda Gates was saying that they were going to press for black people to be put possibly at the top of the list when the vaccine comes out. Now, I don't think this was part of the knee stuff, and it wasn't. Maybe it was because there's some evidence that black people are more likely to get the coronavirus than white people. I noticed that, I think, in early April.
Vernon, the line has gone really bad there. I'm wondering, is there any possibility, because we've only got 10 minutes left anyway, is there any possibility you might disconnect and reconnect to me, because your line has gone very scratchy. I wonder, is there some interference on it, if that's at all possible?
Quite likely. It happened when I used to do radio on the BBC.
Brilliant.
I'll ring you back.
Thanks, Vernon. Yeah, and we'll have 10 minutes then. Vernon Coleman, the line's just gone bad there. VernonColeman.com. Great to have him on the programme again, back with us. He was with us in early June, early this month. Covered quite a lot there. We've got about 10 minutes left. He's talking about Bill Gates, and he's talking about research that he's doing. Presumably this will be presented in a future YouTube video. I know there are a lot of comments on Twitter there and a lot of questions. I think we're covering pretty much everything. I hope that's better, Vernon. I think it might be.
Yeah, that seems better.
Oh,
to me.
Thank God for that. You were just talking, before the line went bad there, you were talking about Gates, and I know you said you're looking into Gates for a future video. I've just got to mention this before you come back in, and you can have as much of the last 10 minutes as you need. Chris Whitty, the chief medical officer, was the director and principal investigator for the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine when they received a grant of $40 million from Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Everywhere you look, even the Oxford people working on the vaccine, they've all worked for Gates in the past, or worked for companies associated with Gates and have taken money from Gates. He's absolutely everywhere, this guy, isn't he?
He is, and it's the arrogance. If you want to help, if you've made a load of money out of some software, and you want to help the world, if you want to help Africa, for example, why not build roads, build water supplies? That's what makes life better. Build farms. Why are these people besotted by vaccines? Why do they think that vaccines are the answer to everything?
Eugenics? Eugenics, maybe?
Sorry?
He's been accused of being a eugenicist. His parents were, and that's a fact. That's not a conspiracy theory. The guy, I think, has said before that vaccines will help with, you know, population growth, which seems like a contradiction in terms or an oxymoron. Could it be eugenics, or am I just...
Well, one has to suspect the I'm being tactful, that one has to suspect the vaccine theory, which seems to be a Bill Gates special. is that if you vaccinate, he says that women in Africa have 8 children because most of them die, and if you vaccinate all the children, then they'll only have 2 or 3 because they won't be dying. Well, you end up with about the same number of people, possibly even more. I don't understand. There've been some very strange stories about vaccines that have been used in the past, and the way that they were done and the way that they contained things that perhaps they shouldn't have contained. And all these have got to be looked into, the stories about vaccines given only to women as opposed to women and men and children. These things are all very odd and very bewildering. And then you look at all the other projects that Gates is involved in, and you look at the business about blocking out the sun, which is being partly subsidized by Gates. Really, just the last thing we want. Farmers really don't want the sun to be blocked out. But yeah. Gates is also said to be involved in the production of fake meat, which won't need farms and farmers. The number of complications in the Gates story are quite horrific. The whole food question, I think food is going to be another big problem for the future. And if you want to kill off a lot of people, of course, making sure that a lot of them starve to death is a very easy way to do it. But that video was taken down off YouTube, and all I was talking about was how things, the shortages of world food and the fact that the prices of food had gone up. I mean, all this is fact. And about the fact that coincidentally there is a problem with locusts in Africa, huge numbers of locusts eating huge numbers of food. And so you add all that to the fact that farms, warehouses, food distribution centers are being shut down in vast numbers when anyone in those buildings gets tested and tests positive. You see, it's very easy to close down a food distribution center if you do testing. So they trot round to the food distribution centers or a warehouse or a farm or an abattoir. I'm vegetarian. I hate abattoirs, but that's beside the point for this point. If you go into those places and you find somebody there that's got the coronavirus, ba-boom, you close it down. You close it down, and then the already shrinking food supply shrinks even more.
Yeah.
The cost of food goes up, and the number of people, particularly in Africa, who are going to die of starvation this year is almost certainly going to be a hell of a lot higher than the number of people who died last year, and so on and so on. It's terrifying. This is a whole global... They talk about... The Prince Charles talks about a global reset. What the hell is he doing telling us we don't want a global reset. We want to stop all this nonsense and get back to real normal, not new normal. Stuff new normal, it's new. That's new abnormal. We want to go back to a proper, ordinary life. Have you seen the rules that they have to follow if you have a pub? I feel so sorry for publicans. How can they possibly make a living? They're going to have half the number of people, and they've got to have 3 people of staff, one on the door taking everybody's phone number and address and name, one on the loos cleaning the loos after every person's been,
yeah,
and one person circulating to make sure that everybody is sitting at their table, not moving about. No loud music, no live music, no bar billiards, no pool, no
nothing.
Sitting at the... No singing, no fun at all.
And in Ireland, I mean, of all the places, in Ireland, it's a 105-minute time limit. And then you've got to get out. And, you know, I was thinking of you this morning because I knew you were coming back on. And thanks for coming on. I say that sincerely because I know you, most of your time now is dedicated to research and your videos. It's a full-time job for you now, your YouTube channel. And by the way, Vernon Coleman takes no sponsorship money. There's no advertisements on his YouTube videos. He takes nothing from nobody. He's entirely independent. These opinions are his and his alone, and they are based on decades of experience in medicine. right? So that's who he is, before anybody says, I wonder who's poking Vernon Coleman. Nobody. But I was thinking of you this morning. I was reading the Times for my sins. And if you want to get married now, you've got to whisper your vows. You've got to wash your hands before and after exchanging wedding rings. Fathers will be barred from walking their daughters down the aisle if they are from different households, which, of course, they mostly will be. And receptions are strongly advised against, limited to two households. Singing is right out at the wedding. Using woodwind instruments right out as well. Touching should be avoided. And again, they reiterate, speak your vows in whispers. This is tyranny. We've got 2 minutes left. I'm going to give you the 2 minutes. I never thought, I'm 45 now, I never thought I would live to see anything like this. Over to you for the last 2 minutes, and thanks again.
Thank you for having me on, Richie. I never thought I'd live to see anything like this. I feel sorry for people who've got small children. I mean, what sort of future are they going to go? I think the people who devised the rules for weddings actually got the word wedding mixed up with funeral.
Yeah.
The whole thing is, the whole of our life has been disrupted in a way which is totally unnecessary. And it's unnecessary because, just remember the facts that no one can deny. The government, the BBC, which is the same thing as the government, says 10 million people globally have had the coronavirus, right? The World Health Organization says that 1 billion people had the flu last year. The World Health Organization also says that up to 650,000 people die of the flu in a bad flu year. Now, I know that a lot of people have died from the coronavirus, but it's nowhere near 650,000. And they have been fiddling the figures as fast as they possibly can to try to get it high. Why would you fiddle the figures? I mean, Johnson's now in the embarrassed position of Britain having the worst figures in Europe and probably some of the worst in the world because we overdid the fiddling. And I think all you have to do is just look at the bald figures, the number of people in the world who get the ordinary flu and the number of people who die from it.
Thanks.
Those are the things.
Those are the ones to look at. Thanks so much for coming back today. You're welcome back anytime. I'll leave you alone. You've got plenty to do with your own YouTube channel. But when you want to sound off, and I don't say that glibly, when you want to come on and talk about this stuff again, you're welcome. You've been listening to Dr. Vernon Coleman. VernonColeman.com. If you go to YouTube.com and look for Vernon, there is only one. You'll be directed to his channel immediately. While it's still there, and I hope that it will be there for as long as he wants it to be there, do watch the videos because they are meticulously researched and brilliantly presented by Dr. Vernon Coleman. Thanks so much for coming back on today and giving us your time when you're so busy. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it, Richie.
Look after yourself, Dr. Vernon Coleman. And he's taken some flack over the years for having the balls, and I don't use the word balls lightly, for having the courage to speak up on these issues. Not just this, but we talked earlier on about Iraq, and he's had a lot of courage. Over the years, he's got a lot of courage, you know. And fair play to him. And I'm glad he came back on this programme today. We're nearly done. Thanks for your tweets. I know we got dozens and dozens and dozens of tweets with questions. I think, bar one or two, I think we covered pretty much everything there. It's I genuinely can't believe it, you know. If you've known me, if you've been with me through my own alternative media journey, you'll know that I very rarely over-egg the pudding, as my great friend Jean Ann would say. I don't do that. I try not to do it. I try to be fairly mild-mannered in my approach and fairly level-headed. This is fucking tyranny. You know, to threaten people that you'll break up their wedding receptions if there are more than two households full of people there. This is a fucking tyranny. It's all right to laugh at it in a monologue and take the piss out of it. But it's reality for people. I saw a tweet from a guy today, and the emotion poured out of his tweet, saying that he's cancelling his wedding. That there's no way that he's going to subject himself and his bride-to-be to that fucking nonsense. That fucking garbage of whispering your vows and washing your fucking hands before you exchange the rings. And daddy can't walk you up to the altar if you're actually living in your own apartment, or if you happen to be living with the man you're going to marry. Where's the outrage? You know, where's the outrage? 'Twould only take a million people to march on Westminster, to march on Whitehall, peacefully. No weapons, no pitchforks, no fucking torches. Peacefully, to tell these people, get the fuck out of those buildings and be gone once and for all, because we're not going to live like this in this fucking crazy world where you can lose your job for saying that men aren't women, though, where you can lose your livelihood because you have an opinion that somebody doesn't like, and now you're told you have to be subjected to house arrest whenever they say that, oh, there's a disease, there's some antibodies floating around in the fucking sky, where they can use words like frontline and refer to people as disease spreaders, like we're the enemy. 'Twouldn't even take a million. There's no army big enough to withstand that. There isn't enough fucking marines and soldiers in the British Army to withstand a million people saying, fuck off, we're done with it now. But it's not going to happen in my lifetime. I'd be happy to be part of that march. Don't ask me to lead it. I don't have enough of a profile. If I had the profile of a megastar, you know, of a proper film star or rock star, I'd be saying this stuff, regardless of what it would do to my sales. Dreadful, dreadful to read that shit in the Times this morning. That fucking filth. Telling people what you have to do with your wedding, huh? Ah, well, we're going out with Fleetwood Mac today just for the heck of it. Thank you so much, Vernon Coleman, and the brilliant Hayden Hewitt, who will be on air later on. Trigger warning, TV on YouTube. Back tomorrow with the phone in tomorrow, by the way. You'll be doing the talking tomorrow. Until then, bye-bye.